Hey everyone, welcome to the Tusok Tusok Filipino Food Podcast, where we find out how food figures into everything in our lives.
Here in this podcast, we will deal you some interesting facts about the history and culture behind our food to start a more conscious discussion of our cuisine.
I'm Pat.
And I'm Matthew, the host of this show.
There's more to sugar than just the conventional white or brown kinds. Here in the Philippines, we can find sugar in a variety of forms and in the most interesting of places. Don't tell your dentists about this episode because today will be all about sugar and other sweet things.
When talking about the Philippines' relationship with sweets, my mind goes in different directions. There's a number of facets up to our sugar. But first, I guess we can travel back to the Spanish colonial era and revisit a literary classic that gives us a glimpse into how sugar played a role not only in desserts, but also in the rules of social class and hierarchy as well. In chapter 11 of Noli Mi Tangere, there's a scene where the characters talk about the difference between two types of hot chocolate served, chocolate and chocolate a.
Are you going to visit the Curita Mosca Muerta? Beware! If he offers you chocolate, which I doubt, but if he should offer you chocolate, you should watch out. If he calls the servant and orders him, little so-and-so, make a small cup of chocolate eh? Then you may stay without fear. But if he says, little so-and-so, make a small cup of chocolate, ah? Then put your hat on and run away.
What? Does he throw the cups at his visitors? Ay carambas!
Man, not so bad as that.
Then what?
Anyone who didn't know the special code laced in this drink would think nothing of the request. Chocolate is chocolate, right? Well, not really. Through these cups of hot chocolate, you could see who were important guests or not.
The key to decoding chocolate and a is in how the drinks are made. Both of their ingredients are a chocolate tablea. Like the name suggests, it's this tablet-like piece of chocolate that you have to dilute with a liquid so that it becomes hard chocolate. Think of it like a Swiss Miss mix, but so much more decadent and shaped into conveniently compact parts. Now, the phrase chocolate is a shortened version of chocolate special. Commonly, this meant that the chocolate served to you was tablea, diluted in milk at the very least. Any other addition to it, such as evaporated milk, condensed milk, and other rich things are welcome, and would it make it even more especial. And as the name suggests, this was served for esteemed and respected guests.
Yeah, and in the book, The Culinary Culture of the Philippines, edited by known Filipino writer and cultural icon Hilda Cordero, there's a recipe for chocolate especial that I tried out myself. The original recipe serves four, so I just did the math so I could make one for myself. You can make it by combining one chocolate tablea, 2/3 of a cup of whole milk, and 1/3 of a cup of water to simmer and dissolve. Then you'll slowly add it to one separated egg yolk in a cup. After that, it's ready to drink. It's a really easy recipe for a foolproof chocolate and it was so thick and rich. The added egg yolk really makes it like a custard of some sort.
So that's how you do it.
Why? How are you doing it?
Mine looked a lot like Chinese egg drop soup because I was adding the egg onto the hot chocolate instead of adding the hot chocolate to the egg
yolk. Yeah. To our listeners here, you're supposed to add the chocolate mixture slowly to your cup with the egg yolk inside so you can temper the egg and like slowly cook it, but without actually making it like scrambled eggs. Don't make it like Matthew, like the egg drop soup.
Kind of kicking myself in the foot because of that. But anyway, compare that then to the chocolate a. The a here stands for the Spanish word aguada, which means that it's watered down. And if you've ever baked and worked with chocolate, you'll know that chocolate and water don't mix well. when you make your chocolate with just one cup of water, it doesn't dissolve. And there's not a lot of flavor either. You'll end up with a chunky, watery, chocolatey mix. This is why they said to run away when you hear chocolate. It probably means you're not too welcome in those premises. And I'm just guessing here that maybe the act of serving you chocolate was just pretense then. At least they were nice enough to serve you tapaya.
Okay, so we talked about tablea and its implication in the earlier days, but now let's move on to something more raw. Baka we're getting too ahead of ourselves here eh. What are the roots of our sugar anyway?
Well, if roots are what you're looking for, then look no further than the stalks of the sugarcane plant. We talked about this in our first episode, but the Philippines really is rife with agricultural land, and there are specific regions where sugarcane can mostly be found. And these areas were crucial in our country's colonization and modernization.
While Filipinos have been chewing and making use of sugarcane way before foreigners stepped foot on our lands, Chinese businessmen and Catholic friars introduced technology and networks that allowed our countrymen to have contact with the world outside of our islands.
Meeting the demands of modern society was difficult to do so. Once a mature cane plant is harvested, the next stalks need to be planted right away. Hacienderos needed a continuous source of labor to do these jobs day by day. And as John Larkins wrote, slavery was an expeditious system in this business of sugar. Sifting through the pages of this book and remembering the research that we did for the past episodes, there is a bit of an ethical dilemma. Was the technological and trade advancements worth the adversity our ancestors faced? Was all this needed to achieve a quote-unquote modern society?
Larkins quoted a line in his book that said, "Fortunes have been made in this colony in cane sugar." That much is true, but it's also important to look at whose hands these fortunes have landed on and whose hands remain empty to this day.
Of course, this conversation is part of a larger discourse on sugar, and if our listeners have their own thoughts to share on it, we want to hear it as well. But for now, let's move on to this week's Share Ko Lang segment.
Did you know, cane juice is also a precursor to a native candy we call sundot kulangot. And sundot kulangot, translated to English, means poking or picking a booger. Of all things, why that though? And what the heck is this candy I'm even talking about? Okay, so when I was about 13 years old, I remember one of our kasambahays bringing a bag full of these orb-like wooden cases at home. These cases were small and came in a set bound together by red tape, thin pieces of wood, and red string too. I thought it was some weird back scratcher then, or some toy they bought from a weird place. But my tita removed one of the orb-like cases inside and told me it was actually sundot kulangot, a snack that she and my mom and all of their siblings used to eat when they were kids. She opened up one of the cases to show something dark and sticky inside. And needless to say, I was kind of disgusted at the time because of the name and because it was something I've never even tried before. So I politely declined. I totally regret this now though, because the sticky mixture turns out to be sweet molasses. And the reason why it's named sundot kulangot is not because it's disgusting or dirty in any way, but because the method of eating it is reminiscent of its name. The candy itself is really thick and sugary. The only way you can eat it is to scoop it out with a stick, or maybe if you don't have a stick, then your own finger. You can just kind of imagine the visual that paints in your head, right? Well, how about you though, Matthew? You have any experience with sweets we give weird names to?
Well, no sweets as weird as weird names as sundot kulangot, but I do have experience with some more, let's say, known sweets. That's like sorbetes. Sorbetes here in the Philippines is pretty popular, especially in the summer. It is also known as dirty ice cream, and it is named such because it's street food. And street food in general is a lot easier to access. And there's not much with, you know, regulating its production. I remembered when I was in kindergarten and grade school and high school, I would walk to our car going home, and we would always buy sorbetes in one way or another. I've always liked the avocado flavor because it gives that subtle sweetness, but you can still definitely taste the avocado. A lot of my friends like the queso flavor, which I never really found the appeal for, but I think the reason why they liked it was because of the little chunks of cheese that come with the ice cream itself. Sorbetes, or dirty ice cream in general, is not overpoweringly sweet, and you can definitely taste the flavor of the ice cream you're eating. And the way these vendors keep their ice cream frozen the entire day, especially under the swelteringly hot heat of the sun, is that they have ice inside their containers, which are salted. And the way that works is salt reduces the freezing point of ice, so that ice stays cooler for longer, therefore keeping the ice cream frozen for much longer. Yun lang, share ko lang. Before we get to the episode, a quick word from our sponsor. The Mamacita Foundation's Heirloom Grains Project promotes the centuries-old traditions of farming the many different varieties of heirloom rice in the Cordillera region. The Heirloom Rice Champorado is an opportunity for everyone to have a taste of tradition while supporting the communities who harvest the grains. The Heirloom Rice Champorado is available in Omino, Minaagan, Kalinga Jekot, and Balatinao variants. You can purchase these online in Lazada, Shopee, the Mamacita's website, on Viber, and on the Mamacita's Recipes Facebook page. Like the Mamacita Foundation's Facebook page for more information on other advocacies that bring the best of the Philippines' culinary heritage to the world. So earlier in the Share Ko Lang segment, Pat talked about sundot kulangot, and it actually connects to the next Filipino sweet that I'd like to talk about. To make this conversation a bit more appetizing naman, I'd like to clarify that the substance inside the case is a type of molasses we get from boiling cane juice until it's reduced into dark molasses. We call that molasses inuyat. Even the origin of the name inuyat is rooted from the way you eat it too. Inuyat sounds like the word inunat, and the word unat means to pull or stretch something. When inuyat is eaten, you usually poke a stick into the viscous substance, pull it, then spin the stick around your fingers to wrap the stretchy candy. It makes for an unconventional lollipop.
Yeah, I wish I could try that. But you can commonly find inuyat in Gerona Tarlacto. And that place is dubbed as the sugarcane capital of the Philippines. And how they make it is quite simple, but interesting too. It's also been extensively covered by our various broadcast stations. So we were able to watch several videos that show different perspectives on how inuyat is made. It involves pressing the sugarcane stalks to get its juice out and then boiling all the juice in a huge caldero until it's reduced into a light brown sticky mixture. Then it's transferred to recycled tin cans or jars to cool, and then they sell it. It's this really simple process that still takes a lot of hard work, especially in the heat of the huge oven they work in and under the sun as well. Another thing that's worth noting is that inuyat is considered as a healthy sweetener because molasses in general contain a variety of nutrients and minerals. Of course, it's no excuse though to consume large amounts of it because it still is sugar at the end of the day.
But aside from that, the Philippines has a number of healthy alternatives to conventional white sugar. We have coconut sugar, which is regarded as some sort of superfood since it has a low glycemic index, meaning it won't raise your glucose levels too high when it's consumed. Be careful though. The American Diabetes Association notes that you should still treat it the same way as regular sugar because it contains the same amount of calories and carbs. From cane juice as well, we were able to get muscovado sugar. It comes from evaporating and crystallizing the cane juice until it becomes this dark and crumbly sugar. It kind of feels like kinetic sand, the things you see in those ASMR videos. Pat, I heard that you can use this as a replacement for brown sugar in most baking recipes.
Yes, actually, I'm super glad you mentioned that. But you just have to be careful with it because Muscovado is really, really dark. I made banana bread with it once and sprinkled some extra Muscovado on top to give my loaf some flecks of crystallized sugar polka dots on top. And aside from that, according to yummy.ph, panucha is also another healthy sugar substitute for some baking recipes. It's a lot more mild compared to Muscovado, Inuyat, and even brown sugar, so I guess it's a good alternative if you don't want baked goods that are too overly sweet.
Panucha is made by crystallizing brown sugar with lime water, and its characteristic feature is the shape it's molded into after letting the mixture cool in an empty coconut shell. And if you didn't know, panucha plus water and sometimes pandan leaves are also used to make arnibal, the sugar syrup we use in taho. I think that's our cue to wrap up the episode.
Saved by the taho vendor's call.
Yep, because we talked so much sweets today already. We went back in time to revisit chocolate ena from the Spanish colonial period. We talked about different and healthier options we have for sugar. And we also dug deep into the good and bad roots of our sugars.
Once again, I'm Pat.
And I'm Matthew.
And we'll see you next week. This episode was produced by Patricia Valoria and Matthew Yuching. It was written by Patricia Valoria with research from Rafael de la Cruz and edited by Matthew Yuching. The music is by Riley Ugarte, and the episode cover was made by Genesis and Galilee Tan.